don't know about you, but I pretty much live and die by lists. I have all kinds of lists that I would like to show you. But I may not. Just advance it. Thank you. Next point. I have probably bought every organizer known to man. I have tried every one of them. There are features I like about a lot of them, but usually I'll use one for a little while, decide I don't like it. But the thing I come back to over and over and over again is just lists. I make lists all the time. The format changes. Currently, I use these little moleskin paper notebooks. I use those a lot. I think next year I'm going to go back to a little notepad that I used to use. It has 3x5 cards in it. But I make lists all the time. And they help keep me on track. They help remind me of what I need to do. I have daily lists. I have project lists. I have New Year's resolutions, which are also called January resolutions, because by the end of January, they're not resolutions anymore. But and now, I don't have a bucket list yet. I mean, there's a few things I'd like to do before I do kick the bucket, but I have not made a formal bucket list. But now that's a big thing. A lot of people have their bucket list. But we all have lists, and we all use them. Here's the problem, though, with lists. Next slide. Problem number one is planning but not doing. You ever make out lists and a good part of your list never gets done? And the Bible talks about that somewhat. The Bible warns us of the folly of not following through on things. For example, in the book of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 14, down in verse 23, to make an apt answer, that's chapter 15, Proverbs 14, verse 23, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk ends only in poverty. Yeah, that's a good way to go broke, is not do anything. You have to go beyond talk, you have to go beyond making lists, and you have to get around to the business of actually accomplishing something. And James said it pretty bluntly in James chapter 4, verse 17, so whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, to him it is sin. So making all of these plans and making all of these lists is a good thing. But if there is no follow-through, that is a problem. And so that's one problem. So next problem that we have is doing but not being. And this is really where I want us to go in the sermon this morning. It is one thing to do a lot of stuff, but at the end of the day, what are you? What kind of character do you possess? At the end of the day, has all of your doing made you a better person? Has all of your activity revealed a character that is worth imitating? A kind of character that influences others for good? And we as Christians really need to be concerned about this. It's not just enough to do a lot of good things. It's not enough to do a lot of even good, even religious activities. At the end of the day, we have to be something that is worthwhile. We have to be something that reflects the character of God. You remember the account of the rich young ruler? There's three different accounts of it. I'm thinking of Luke 18. Three accounts of the rich young ruler. He was something, at least sort of. He was rich. He was young. He was a ruler, a man in a position of authority. And when he came to Jesus, he said, What good thing must I do? And Jesus said, well, you know the commandments. And he rattles off several of the commandments. And the man said, well, I've done all these things. He had done a lot. But what was he? When Jesus said, well, there's one thing you lack. Go sell your possessions and give to the poor and follow me. Be something better than you are. And he was unwilling to do that. For all of his doing, he really wasn't much of a person. Because he was owned by his possessions. His possessions, he did not own his possessions owned him. So what I want us to do today is talk about this, to do and to be. As we get ready to go into the new year, I'm sure all of us are thinking about our plans for next year. Some of us, many of us, are looking back over the previous 12 months and saying, what happened? I had all of these plans. I was going to do all this stuff, and somewhere along the way, some of the stuff didn't get done. And that's okay sometimes. Sometimes the plans that we made may not have been worth all that much anyway. But all of us, I hope, do take to heart the idea that we need to be accomplishing things with our lives. But what I really want us to think about is, how do we connect the business of doing, our day-to-day activities, how do we connect that with our character? How do we use our activities to make ourselves into better people? That's really the issue for us as Christians. So I want us to address three questions today, and we'll look at each one of these in turn. First of all, what should I be? Secondly, how can I do something and be something? How can I do and be? And then finally, how can doing facilitate being? We're going to address the relationship between what we do and what we are. And we'll look at each of these three questions in turn. Let's look at the first question. Question number one is, what should I be? And there are a whole lot of be lists in the Bible. Let's read several of these. Psalm 15. This one comes from the Old Testament. It's a description of the citizen of Zion. Psalm 15. O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell on your holy hill? Who is worthy to come to the hill of God, the temple of God, and worship him? And here's the answer. He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart, who does not slander with his tongue and who does no evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord, who swears to his own hurt and does not change, who does not put out his money at interest and does not take a bribe against the innocent, he who does these things shall never be moved. Another list, it comes from Matthew chapter 5, the Beatitudes. That was read for us a minute ago, so I won't reread it. But it's a list of character traits that the citizen of God's kingdom has. Another list comes from 2 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter chapter 1, the so-called Christian graces or the Christian virtues. 2 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 5, Peter says, "For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these qualities are yours and increasing, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For whoever lacks these qualities is so nearsighted that he's blind, having forgotten that he was cleansed from his former sins. Therefore, brothers, be all the more diligent to confirm your calling and election, for if you practice these qualities, you will never fail. For in this way there will be richly provided for you an entrance into the eternal kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ." Two different times in that, he gives us this list of character traits that we ought to possess. But twice in there, he makes this relationship obvious between what we are and what we do. First of all, he says there in verse 10, "Be all the more diligent to confirm your calling and election if you practice these qualities." How do you practice these things? How do you put them into practice? It's by the day-to-day activities that you pursue. It's by what you do every day when you go out into the world. And earlier, he also makes the comment in verse 8, "For if these qualities are yours and increasing, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful." How can you tell if a person is ineffective or unfruitful? It's by what they do. You look at their actions. Are they productive in what they do? And he says, for that to be true, you have to possess these characters. There's a relationship then between what we are and what we do. And one other list comes from the book of Galatians. It's a pretty well-known list, the fruit of the Spirit. Here again is another character-driven list, Galatians chapter 5, starting down in verse 22. "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." So here is just a small sampling, and there's a lot of these. A small sampling of some of the character lists that we have in the Bible. We need to be familiar with all of these character traits because all of these define who and what we are as Christians. We talk about imitating Christ. We talk about following in His footsteps. If you want to do that, you've got to possess these qualities. So we have to be familiar with them to start with. So I want to suggest step number one. Next slide. Make a master list of virtues. Just go through the scriptures and list these kinds of virtues that you're supposed to have and ask yourself, do I have them? You're never going to develop these qualities. Peter talked about these, not only possessing these qualities, but increasing these qualities. We ought to grow in regard to each one of these things. The only way that we're ever going to possess them is if we take a hard look at what they are and say, Cloris, is this you? When you look in the mirror, when you look in the spiritual mirror of God's Word, do you see these qualities reflected in your life? And a few things about this list. Number one, they're not just socially acceptable things. These are character traits. This isn't about just picking up the trash and being eco-friendly. It's not just about recycling. It's not just about being polite. This is character. This is what you are in your heart of hearts. It's also, again, these are spiritual qualities. Next point. They are unique to us as children of God, things that are unique to our character as Christians. And these are things that have to be relevant to your life. You need to go, first of all, make up this list, and then go down and look at these lists particularly and ask yourself, which ones do I lack? Which ones do I really, really, really need to work on? So if you wanted to combine these aspects of your life, doing and being, you got to start with the being part. That's the most important. You start out and make a list of the qualities that you as a child of God are told to possess, and you need to take a hard look at yourself and say, which ones am I doing okay with, but which ones am I really struggling with? Those are the ones you need to concentrate on. All right, now the next question that we need to ask, how can I do and be? First of all, when you compile the list, when you compile your to-do list, you need to have a corresponding to-be list. Look for ways to execute your list. When you're executing your to-do list, look for ways to incorporate your to-be list. We have to make a connection in our heads and in our activities. There's a relationship between these two. It's not simply about, okay, tomorrow I have to buy chicken at Kroger's. Or tomorrow I have to go and pay the bill. Or tomorrow I have to do this and that. How does that relate to what you are as a child of God? How does that relate to the kinds of things that you do as a Christian? What does that say about your character? How can I do what I need to do and be what I need to be? So here's the next step. You need to integrate your to-do list with your to-be list. How do you do that? Well, pull out your master list of virtues. Look over the ones that you know that you need to work at. Then you start putting together your list. Every day you're going to have a different need of different virtues. Some days are going to require extreme patience, for instance. Other days may require extreme humility. Every day you're going to be in different circumstances. Even if your day is fairly repetitive, different days call for different kinds of qualities, different kinds of circumstances. Concentrate on just a few items per day. Obviously, you can't transform yourself completely in one afternoon. It takes at least two afternoons to do that. But you need to again, try to make your goals reasonable. Make sure that what you're doing is within your grasp. A lot of people have done this through the years. Benjamin Franklin was famous for his 13 virtues. Benjamin Franklin had a list of 13 virtues, and he would work on one each week. So 13 weeks out of the year, and he would go through that list of virtues four times a year. That's a very disciplined way of doing it. I want to propose that we can probably bite off slightly bigger chunks, but we need to pay attention to these items a little bit every day. And start with your to-be list, and then ask yourself this question. Next point. I will work on being this while I'm doing this. Now, bring up this next slide is just a list of typical things to do. Let's say tomorrow you got to call up MLG&W and dispute something on your bill. Something is not right, or maybe it's with one of your credit card companies or whatever else, one of the bills isn't right. And then tomorrow you're going to have to do a little bit of babysitting, or maybe tomorrow you have to talk to a coworker. Maybe tomorrow, again, chickens are on sale, and so you really got to get chickens. You're out of chickens. Everybody needs chickens. You may have to make a really big decision tomorrow. You may be paying your bills tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow you got to come down on the teenagers really hard. They've been acting up, and it's time to address that. Maybe tomorrow there's something you're going to do for the needy. I know they're talking, tomorrow night about the love baskets. That's an example of that. Maybe you're planning on watching one of your favorite shows tomorrow night, or in the case of Eric, you'll find an excuse to go fishing. So whatever it is you're doing, you start with your to-do list. Now, how do you incorporate your to-be list? Next slide. Here's how you do it. Have you ever argued with a phone representative about a bill? Do you find that that requires great patience? Oh, yeah. It does. Do you ever find yourself about to explode? You think your head is going to pop as you're talking to this obstinate person on the other end of the line about that bill? On your to-do list, write, call MLG and W, and then off to the side, write, maybe in red letters, maybe get a highlighter or something, or in big letters, patience. You need to do this, but while you're doing this, you need to be this. As you're babysitting, think about all the joy that those little kids bring you. Yes, and they do, but sometimes they can test your patience. In the workplace, maybe you're going to have a hard conversation with a worker about their lack of performance. Maybe they're not living up to what their job description says. Now, you can approach that in a lot of ways. You can come down on them hard and heavy, and maybe that's what they need, but you also need to work on your sympathy. Sympathy is an important quality. As you're going shopping, and this time of year especially, everything is on sale. Everything is on sale. Lowest prices of the season, that's what they all say. Maybe while you're shopping, and on your shopping list, in big bold letters write, contentment. It is so easy to walk down the aisles of those stores, whether it's Walmart or Target, or you go into the mall or wherever else, IKEA, lots of aisles. And you go to those places and you see those things and they say, you need to buy me. And you say in your mind, I need to buy that. I do. Well, do you? Or do you need to exercise contentment? As you are making decisions, you know, if you're in a position of authority and you can make decisions that affect other people, you can get a big head about that. And if you're going to be making some big decisions tomorrow, maybe right off to the side, I need to practice humility with that. As you're paying your bills, you need to be at peace. Paying bills is not fun. I don't like bills. I don't like them at all. And sometimes the stomach acid starts churning and the head starts pounding and you say, will I ever get this junk paid off? Why did I ever buy that? That goes back to the shopping trip, by the way. And you're seeing the consequences of your lack of contentment. What am I going to do? There's too much month at the end of my money. And so we worry about that, and it becomes a problem. Punishing the kids. How about riding off to the side? Be merciful. They need it. Oh, sometimes they need to be come down on. But sometimes we need to exercise mercy. If you're dealing with the needy, be generous. I'll tell you what, dealing with homeless people, you know, have you ever been out and you're by a restaurant and someone's standing there at the door as you walk out and they say, can you help me? I know what my tendency is to do, but as a Christian, my tendency should be I need to exercise compassion toward that person. And we have so many demands on our time and on our money and on our generosity. Everybody wants a piece of us. It is real easy to grow cold-hearted. It is real easy to say, I don't have time for this. I don't have money for this. Go your way, be warmed, be filled. Does that sound familiar? Or when we're watching television or reading our books or whatever it is we do to relax, are we being spiritually minded in what we do? Or if you're going fishing, do you tell the truth? Fishermen are notorious about that's what they say. athletes are notorious about. All kinds of people are notorious about stretching the truth. And so whatever it is I'm doing, I need to connect this with my character. And so maybe on your to-do list, what you need to actually do is write out your to-dos, and then next to that, write out your to-bes. And which one is more important? Oh, I understand paying the bill, yeah, that's an urgent matter. You don't want your lights cut off. But at the same time, it's far more important what you are than just accomplishing your to-do list. And so this is really the heart of what we're talking about, is taking the two concepts and putting them together in a way that reflects who and what we are in terms of our character. Now, question number three. How can doing facilitate being? How do you make this into a habit? How do you get to where every time you're working on your to-do list, your things to do, how do you develop this as a habit? How do you get to the point where it just becomes natural for you to think in those terms? Again, when you're working on your character, that can be an awfully deceptive thing. You start working on this, you say, well, you know, I think I've mastered this now. Well, maybe you have, or maybe that's just your ego talking. And another trick that the devil uses, we concentrate so much on this character flaw that we may forget about some of the other character flaws that we have. I know there have been times there will be specific issues that I'm working on, and I think to myself, if I can just get this thing worked out, everything's going to be good. And I get that thing worked out, and oh, what about these eight other things I was neglecting? It has a way of coming back on you. So what we have to learn to do is use our daily routine, our chores, our experiences to help shape our character. This is the essence of this doing and being. Again, first of all, we have to identify what we want to be. Look at those characteristics in the Bible and say, this is what I need to imitate. Secondly, we need to put the two lists together. What am I doing? What do I need to be? How do these things match up? But this is where we turn it into a habit, something that is a matter of daily. It becomes a daily thing for us. It's something that we do all the time. I want to tell you a little bit of a story. I came across this story back in the late 90s, and some of you may remember this. Many of you remember Stephen Covey. He died, I think, 5 years ago. Stephen Covey wrote that best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I want to tell young adults, if you've never read that, you need to read that. That's one of the best books ever written about personal productivity. I have read all kinds of organizational books. It is in a class by itself. It is just totally unlike anything you'll ever read. But anyway, his specialty, he was kind of a business consultant. He was a professor at Brigham Young out in Utah. He was a Mormon. And he was a business consultant. He had built up quite a bit of business. And a lot of it was based on the success of that book, which was released in 1989. And had a lot of success with it, and he was a consultant to businesses about developing their leadership and getting more productivity out of people. He sold a few organizers. He developed some planners and organizers to go along with his book and his ideas, but that wasn't the bread and butter of his business. Then you may remember the Franklin Company. Remember Franklin Quest? They were the best-selling producers of organizers and planners on the planet. They also were started in the 80s. And by the late 80s, early 90s, they had the number one product out there. They were selling those things like hotcakes. They consulted with businesses. Somewhere along the way, the two companies decided to get together. You had the nuts and bolts people in the Franklin Quest Company. I mean, they had the best organizers on the planet. They were all about getting things done. And then you've got the kind of conceptual side by Stephen R. Covey, big businessman, you know, and again, he's really into principle-based leadership, principle-based productivity. You know, he's the guy that kind of pioneered this idea of writing out your mission statement and all of that. So it seemed like a marriage made in heaven. And so in the late 80s or early 90s, the two companies merged. When they merged, Franklin was a public company. They were, that first year of their merger, their stock prices were between $17 and $24 a share. Pretty good price at that time, decent company. They started plummeting, and they started plummeting fast because the two couldn't get together. The Franklin people criticized the Covey people by saying they're too theoretical. They were about being, but not about doing. And the Covey people turned around and criticized the Franklin people. Well, they're all about just doing these lists and getting all this stuff done. We need to talk about character. At one point, their stock got down, in 2003, their stock prices got down to 65 cents a share, and the New York Stock Exchange threatened to take them off the market. They were struggling just to get things done because you had two totally different ways of building a business. Now, eventually, in 2004, they got back up to over $1 a share, $1 to $3 a share. 2005, I think it was, they got back to $6 to $8 a share. And then I noticed, as I was preparing the lesson, I looked up. This past week, they closed at $19 a share. So it's taken them 20 years to get back to what they were. And it's become kind of a classic case study. You would think that these two products and these two groups would be ideally fitted, but they had the same problem we're talking about. There's doing and there's being. How do you put the two together in a constructive way? I want to suggest three things that will help us with step number three. We have to shift three things in our daily routines. Number one, you need to make a shift from actions to attitudes. Yes, you have to do things. You always have things to do. But what is the attitude that goes along with that? What is the motivation behind it? As I am paying my bills, am I sitting there fuming, about to explode? I want to bite that person's head off. I want to reach through the phone and throttle them. It's what I want to do. No. That's not character. That's not what I am as a child of God. And as I'm going shopping, I need to exercise some contentment. As I do these things from day to day, I need to pay attention to the attitudes behind everything that I do. The second shift that I need to make, I need to quit concentrating on things and start concentrating on people. Things are nice, things are fun, things are good, but people are far more important. And I think that one of the reasons why we get so skewed in our to-do list, we concentrate on the things, we concentrate on the actions, we concentrate on the visible kinds of things. We forget the people involved. We forget the relational aspect in what we do. If we'll emphasize the relationships above the things, that will help us get oriented back to this connection between doing and being. And the third thing, we need to get away from this world and shift our thinking to eternity. How does this affect my relationship to God? In all these things that I'm doing, am I glorifying Him? Am I glorifying Him? I taught the teenage Bible class this morning to fill in for Carrie. We're looking at the book of Zechariah. One of my favorite chapters from Zechariah is Zechariah chapters 7 and 8. In the fourth year of King Darius, this is about 518 B.C., someone comes to Zechariah, and this is at the end of captivity. And they ask a question. They want an official word from the Lord. They come and they say to the priests of the house of the Lord of hosts and the prophets, should I weep and abstain in the fifth month as I have done for so many years? And you get down to verse 5 and you get ahead to chapter 8, verse 19. You find out that for the last 70 years during captivity, they had instituted four fasts on their own. A fast in the fourth month, a fast in the fifth month, a fast in the seventh month, and a fast in the tenth month. These were not things that God had commanded. These were just things they initiated on their own. And every one of them commemorated something about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. One of them commemorated the breaching of the walls. One commemorated the initial onset of the siege. Another commemorated the destruction of the temple. And one commemorated the death of Gedaliah, the governor appointed by Nebuchadnezzar. So with each of these events, they instituted a fast. And for 70 years while they were in captivity, they fasted about this, these four times a year, to remind themselves of how awful they had been. And so they say, well, we're back in the city. Zechariah was a prophet of the post-exile, the restoration period. Zechariah was one of the men who exhorted the exiles to continue rebuilding the temple. Now that the temple is being rebuilt, the walls will be rebuilt, life is being restored, do we need to keep on fasting? And the answer came from the Lord, starting in verse 5. Say to all the people of the land and the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth month and in the seventh for these 70 years, was it for me that you fasted? And when you eat and when you drink, do you not eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Were not these the words that the Lord proclaimed by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and prosperous, with her cities around her and the south and the lowland inhabited? He says, whose glory were you seeking? Were you doing this to honor me, or were you doing this to make yourself feel better? And what we have to do in everything that we do is seek God's glory. As I go about my to-do list, am I really thinking about eternal things? Am I thinking about how this either how it helps me in my relationship to God, or how it reflects something about my relationship to God? You know, go back to disputing a bill or dealing with a customer service issue. How is your behavior going to reflect back on your claim that you are a child of God? Will it? Based on how you deal with these unruly customers, or these unruly agents, or these unscrupulous business people, can they tell that you are a child of God by how you have behaved? Or if they have heard you say before, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, I go to Barton Church of Christ, and they hear what's coming out of your mouth, or they see the steam coming out your ears, or whatever other symbol of your anger, can they tell that you're a child of God? I remember one time I was in Louisville. I was at a gas station. And you know how gas stations are. You're waiting for a slot to open up. And it was a very busy day. And there was a car. I think I had already pulled up. And there was a car kind of waiting to come in. Well, before she could come in, car left and another car pulled up. And I noticed as I was watching that car waiting to come in, had rosary beads hanging from the rearview mirror, had a St. Christopher on the dashboard. There were all kinds of, you know, like pro-life and very religious sentiment bumper stickers all over the car. And as soon as that guy pulled in, she started honking. I was standing outside. I could hear the cussing from inside her car. And she was shaking her fist and extending various fingers and all kinds of things in her tirade against this man who took her place in the gas. And I'm thinking, there's a disconnect here. There's a disconnect here. What she seems to want people to think about her and what she actually is were two very different things. And we can be that way if we're not careful. Above all else, we need to make sure that our being and our doing proceed from exactly the same place, and that is our relationship to God. We need to do things that are worthwhile. We need to do things in a way that we meet our God-given obligations. But all the while that we do them, we need to be the right kind of people. And if what you have to do is make out your daily list and write those character traits on the side, whether you write them down to me is irrelevant, but you need to think about them all the time. We need to make sure that these two things naturally complement one another in our day-to-day lives. Now, again, this time of year, we're thinking a lot about this. We're looking back at the previous year and all the things that we did. And we'll probably look back with some satisfaction on some of these things. We may look back at some regret with a few of the other things. And most of us are planning already. Probably in the next few weeks, I got to go buy some new calendars and new organizer stuff and get my pens ready and my pads ready and all of that, because I'm going to hit 2018. I'm going to hit it running, at least till the end of January. But regardless of anything I do next year, I need to be what the Lord wants me to be. And I hope that I've challenged you to think about that this morning. What's the relationship between what you do on a day-to-day basis and what you are as a child of God? If there's a disconnect, you need to reconnect. And that's a conscious thing you do every day in everything that you do. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you need to understand that God is concerned about every part of your life, even your to-do list. He wants to know that he takes the first place in everything that you do. And if he's not in first place, there's a problem. And the only way to correct that problem is by submitting the whole of your life to him. That's what being a Christian is. You turn everything over to him. Now, for those of us that are Christians, Is our to-do list and our be list, are they the same? Do they mesh like they ought to? Are we the kind of people that we ought to be? If not, we need to make the necessary corrections. If we can help you in any way this morning, we invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.